Perhaps most people think that they know Richard Nixon. Evan Thomas, editor-at-large of Newsweek and best-selling author of Ike's Bluff and Sea of Thunder, disposes of the cartoonish version of Nixon and creates a three-dimensional portrait of a complex man filled with both light and darkness in his new book, Being Nixon, A Man Divided. The book is published by Random House. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Evan Thomas to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hi, Joe. Great.
Very nice
to be with you.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Was it always your intention to look at this in a somewhat psychological way?
Yeah, because a lot of books have been written about Nixon, and most of them are just piling on Watergate and how awful he was. And I just knew there was a more interesting person there. To me, Nixon is the great American novel because how somebody that shy, and he was really shy and lonely, could become the most powerful politician in the world in the late 20th century and one of the most interesting political figures of that century, just was, it had to be an interesting story, just had to be. And so that's what I was looking for.
When his chief of staff, H.R. Haldeman, called him the weirdest man he ever met, how truthful was he being?
Well, I love Haldeman. Haldeman's a very button-up. He's got that buzz cut. You know, people used to tease him for being a good German and all that, and he certainly ran an efficient White House. But he was a good observer, and he was with Nixon night and day. And there are just great scenes in Haldeman's diary of Nixon. For instance, Nixon loved fires. Even in the middle of summer, he loved fires. And he was forever setting off smoke alarms, and Haldeman would have to show up, and there'd be police, firemen all over the place. This is when Nixon's the president. Nixon would be loving it. He loves the smell of smoke. He's having a great time. And Haldeman would just kind of shake his head. One diary entry, this is the end of a day when Nixon had been attacked by anti-war protesters, and Nixon loved taunting anti-war protesters by giving him the peace sign, you know, that V signal that the anti-war protesters picked up in the 60s. Well, that was an old V for victory sign from World War II, and Nixon liked to taunt the protesters, and they threw things at him. Nixon just enjoyed that, and he enjoyed standing in his smoky house relishing the day. Nixon and Haldeman went back and wrote in his diary, "Weirdest day yet."
You make the point that in even high school and college, in the Navy, and then, yes, eventually in the politics, that he was just as you described. He would find a cause, and then he would go to great lengths to fight the enemy of that cause.
He believed he was surrounded by enemies. This, of course, ultimately was his downfall. I mean, this is what destroyed him. But before it destroyed him, it made him, because he was powered by this desire to get even, for revenge, to show him. You know, he turned down a scholarship to Harvard as a high school kid, and he was bitter about it. There wasn't enough money, even with a scholarship, enough money for him to go. And he forever thereafter said, "I hate Harvard, get rid of all those Harvard guys." But he hired two Harvard professors as his closest aides. So Nixon is just a mass of contradictions like this. And he's driven by insecurity, and yet he's clever and smart and knows to work around it, or at least he did until it finally caught up with him.
I find the backstory here fascinating, and this is so much of what I didn't know about Nixon, and that is his younger years. He starts out and basically growing up in the shadow of his brother, of his older brother, who seemed to be, if there is such a thing in a family unit, and many times there is, a favorite.
The favorite because he was charming and funny and girls liked him. Nixon was none of those things. But when the older brother dies, Nixon has to kind of fill in for him. And then a younger brother also dies. Nixon is now trying to be three brothers in one to please his very demanding parents. His dad was a bully and his mom was sort of a passive-aggressive, saintly, but passive-aggressive. And Nixon just, I think, never felt loved. Henry Kissinger once said, "Imagine what Richard Nixon would have been like if he had been loved." You know, Kissinger's exaggerating for effect, but Nixon was just filled with this need. Nixon was always running against and trying to outdo handsome, charming guys like the brother who died, like Jack Kennedy. Nixon was just obsessed all his life with the Kennedys and with Jack Kennedy.
You talk about what made him a moment ago, that the part of what brought him down is what made him. So without great charm oozing out of his pores, what was it in him that it was able to, in a fairly aggressive way, to make his way in a political world?
He understood what it was like to be an outsider. And he knew there were more outsiders than insiders. In college, he gets to Whittier College, and there is the cool kids fraternity called the Franklins. And Nixon has the idea of starting a fraternity for uncool kids, because there are more uncool kids than there are cool kids. And sure enough, Nixon gets elected student body president. This is a formula he went back to again and again. 1969, he coins the phrase, the silent majority. Many of your listeners will remember 1969, the country is just blowing apart with anti-war protests and rioting. Right. And Nixon knew there was a silent majority of Americans who really didn't like all that stuff, didn't like the liberal elites, didn't like the TV broadcasters. You know, this is the group that later became the viewers of Fox News. And Nixon just knew how to appeal to them. And they were a majority. They were silent, but they were a majority. Nixon was elected in 1972 in one of the greatest landslides in history, winning 35% of the Democratic vote. He's a Republican. He won 35% of Democrats because he appealed to their dislike of Washington and the elites, also their patriotism. He was very good at that. He understood heartland values, heartland resentments, also positive stuff. He understood patriotism. He was the first guy to wear that little pin, the American pin in his lapel. That starts with Nixon.
You talk about this element of bravery in him, of that he was capable of great bravery.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he loved plunging into angry crowds. It's something, it just appealed to him in some way. He was very shy personally, but liked crowds. He goes to South America in 1958, and it's a really angry crowd. They assault his car. They are smashing it with handles and smashing the windows, and the Secret Service agent sitting next to him pulls out his pistol, and Nixon says, "Put it back. We're not going to shoot anybody unless they actually come in the car." Fortunately, the car got away. Nixon was a very cool guy. He was close to getting killed there, and he was a cool guy under pressure, and he was cool in many other cases, with Mao Zedong, the head of China, with Chou Enlai, with Leonid Brezhnev, the head of the Soviet Union, in negotiations, very big-time, tense negotiations. He was a cool cat. It's just that at other times he would rant and rave and carry on. You can hear him on those awful White House tapes. He could just be dreadful, but cool sometimes, hot-headed other times. You know, he was an enigmatic character that way.
I was going to ask you about the tapes, because the portrait that we often have, which comes from those tapes, and even in press interviews, and even in the David Frost interview, where he does not come off as overly likable.
No. Likable is a word rarely used for Richard Nixon, although it's worth noting that his family liked him. You know, his daughters, he was a good father, and his daughters were very loving and attached to him. He had a complicated marriage. He was initially very close to Pat, I think. Now, by the end of Watergate, she's looking pretty worn out, and I think there's some distance, and they're both drinking too much. And so there is a period when it doesn't work well. But Nixon was close to his own family. They liked him, but pretty much nobody else did. He was not a likable person. He knew that. He disliked being unlikable. He was always getting aides to try to leak anecdotes about what a warm and fuzzy guy he was. Totally fell flat because the anecdotes were hokey and phony. So it bothered him, and he just had to power through it. He also, unfortunately, liked to play the tough guy, the kind of macho tough guy. Anybody who's seen Mad Men, you know, knows the type. Right. 1950s, 60s kind of macho guy. Nixon was bad at that. He wasn't even good at swearing. He liked to swear, but he was bad at it. Lyndon Johnson, he was good at swearing. Nixon was sort of, it was an act, and he was bad at it.
So this idea, one of the things that's fascinating in the book about, as you say, so much has been written about Watergate, but you show in here that the seeds of what ultimately grew into Watergate, deviousness, this underhanded political tactics, this reputation that he had as a schemer, all of these seeds were planted very early in his political career.
They were. They start really with California politics in the late 40s, which were early, what we now call Oppo Research Negative Campaign. That gets a start in the wholesale politics of California in the 1940s. Nixon early on masters it. But, you know, his tutor in a lot of the stuff, or at least his model, was the Kennedys. He always thought he was just catching up. The Kennedys were better at dirty tricks than he was. Now, Nixon could be paranoid about this, but he was not entirely wrong. I wrote a biography of Robert Kennedy, who was Jack Kennedy's brother and sometimes hatchet man. And the Kennedys, you know, actually were better at Nixon at playing political hardball in the early days. Nixon tried a little bit too hard to catch up and rather surpassed his master. And by the time he's president, he's got the plumbers and he's created this atmosphere in the White House where they'll stoop to nothing. And, of course, it caught up with him.
Well, I was going to say, the trick is not to get caught, right?
Well, one of the things that people think of Nixon as this, you know, devious monster. And Nixon could be clever, but he was very unclever about things. The Watergate burglars, they were clowns. They were screw-ups. What happened was the FBI used to do the spying for presidents, and J. Edgar Hoover got out of the business by 1970. He says, we're not doing this anymore. So Nixon went in-house, as you might say, like taking a business in-house, and created the plumbers, an in-house political intelligence network. Well, they were bad at it. They bungled the burglary at the Watergate. They bungled the burglary of Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office this gets into the weeds here, but they were trying to dig up dirt on the guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers. They screwed it up, and, of course, they got caught. And then Nixon made it worse because he was so shy. He was unable to confront his own subordinates. He didn't know about the break-in. He only found out about it after the fact. But then he couldn't confront his subordinates and say, hey, what happened here? Instead, he permitted a cover-up, and it cost him his job.
One of the things that it's hard, again, because of the complicated figure that he is, it's also difficult to really pinpoint a political ideology, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. He's confounded. Listen, there are whole schools of people getting confused about this. He's liberal in a lot of ways. There are a lot of social legislation passes in his time. He creates the EPA. He extends Social Security to the disabled as well as the elderly. He creates OSHA. He sort of sounds like FDR when he's in office. Now, why is that? Well, one reason is he likes to confound his enemies. He's outflanking the left, and the left is controlling Congress. Congress is liberal and democratic and when he's in office, so he's sort of outflanking his enemies. Two, he likes to get stuff done. He believes in accomplishing. This is an age of activism, unlike Washington today where nothing gets done. In 1970, the spirit of the age was let's do stuff. Let's be active. And Nixon was an activist. He also believed in compromise, so he signed a lot of stuff that was a compromise with the Democrats. It was progressive, but less progressive than the Democrats would have liked. All these reasons made him today look like a liberal. He wasn't. His basic instincts were conservative. If he'd had a second term, I think he would have been very conservative.
How much of it then was his political belief that he was doing, or how much of it was he doing just for the win?
It's a good question, and the answer is muddy, half and half. You know, he was expedient. He did have a general conservative philosophy. He did want to take power away from the bureaucrats in Washington and give it to the states. Giving money straight to the states, that comes from Nixon. And he had a general idea of trying to lessen Congress's power and increase executive power to disperse power. But I'm getting awfully wonky about this. The real truth is, as you said, he was mostly expedient. He wanted to get reelected. He wanted to do stuff. He lived in a fairly liberal age. 1970 is a pretty liberal time in the American zeitgeist, and he went with it.
I also found it in the later part of the book, post-resignation, of how you repair yourself. And then eventually, at some point in the 80s, of becoming somewhat of an elder statesman.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's kind of admirable about Nixon, how could you be more disgraced than Richard Nixon when he got on that helicopter in 1974. He almost died. He had phlebitis. He was literally dying on the operating table. But he came back. He always did. You know, he came back from defeat in 60 and in 62, and he just worked his way back and became kind of an elder statesman. He used to have dinners in New York for all these journalists who hated him, who had run him out of office. He'd invite him for these elaborate Chinese dinners, and he took a kind of perverse pleasure in winning over the very people who hated him. And to a remarkable degree, he succeeded. When he died, President Clinton gave a eulogy. The time has come, he said, for Judge Nixon fully, not just on Watergate, but on the totality of what he had done. Kissinger praised him as a guy who never quit, which was true. Bob Dole was there. You know, at the very end, he had recaptured. I wouldn't say he's come all the way back. He has not. And he doesn't deserve to. Watergate was a terrible thing. He deserves to get blamed for that. But it is amazing to what extent he was able to capture the mantle of elder statesman.
In a rather short period of time where he was writing books on many different subjects, he was looking at China, he was looking at the economy, and he was looking at the turn of the century and saying, here are things that we should keep our eye on.
He did. He had a big picture. I mean, he was he used to say, I hate I like to talk to athletes. I don't like to talk to intellectuals. They're too effeminate, which was nonsense. I mean, he liked athletes, but he liked intellectuals. He was one. He read much more than other presidents because he was so lonely. He didn't like to talk to people. He would go to his hideaway and he would read. I've gone through Nixon's library looking at all the books he underlined. He was a deep thinker, and he had a worldview, that a balance of power worldview, that he said we have to bring China into the company of nations. We have to go to Moscow. He was an anti-communist, but he was the first president to go to Moscow, personally negotiate an arms control deal that slowed down a very dangerous arms race. He did this because he had a big picture view of the world, and he was able to implement it. He didn't just think about it. He pulled it off.
Well, the book is endlessly fascinating and just an amazing read. It is Being Nixon, A Man Divided. It is published by Random House. Evan Thomas, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Great to be on. Take care.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Being Nixon, A Man Divided, published by Random House by Evan Thomas. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.